action without my help during toy play and sensory social routines. I know how to vary or expand the joint activity to teach other kinds of imitation to my child during toy play and sensory social routines. I know how to create interesting and new spectacles that my child will imitate during toy play and sensory social routines. My child thinks these variations are fun and attempts to imitate actions back. Step 5. Putting imitation games into the joint activity frame. In Chapter 6, we discussed at length the four parts of a joint activity routine: setup, theme, variation, and closing transition. You can probably see now how well imitation games fit into this framework. You may even have been using this four-part framework already, either intentionally or automatically, as you have been focusing on imitation activities and variations within them. The play frame that we have been talking about all through this chapter on teaching imitation is the joint activity frame, with a beginning, materials come out, a theme, the first action is imitated, and one or more variations. We have not discussed closings or transitions yet, but ideally the closing is an organized ending, as you have practiced in Chapter 6. In the rest of this book, we continue to suggest ways for you to use the joint activity framework and imitation strategies to teach other kinds of developmental skills to your child. Imitation and turn-taking during object-focused joint activities and sensory social routines, as well as during various caregiving routines, are fundamental processes by which young children learn from others about language, social behavior, and how objects work. If you learn the concepts we have introduced so far, you will already have the most important teaching skills you can have for helping your child move ahead, even if you go no further than this chapter. Activity checklist. Am I putting imitation into the joint activity frame? My imitation activities typically involve a setup period, in which my child and I identify a theme of the activity. We take a few turns sharing the theme by imitating each other in turn or playing it in unison. After a few repetitions, either my child or I typically vary or expand the theme to include additional actions to imitate. When my child's attention is beginning to wane, or when the routine feels too repetitive, we typically do an organized closing transition, putting things away, making a clear transition together, or making another choice. I am using the four-part structure of joint activities at least sometimes during meal, dressing, changing, bathing, bedtime, and I see my child beginning to anticipate the steps in more of these routines. What about Claire? Claire and her grandma have developed several toy games and sensory social routines that include different acts of imitation. One of Claire's favorite activities is when grandma imitates her rolling a toy car back and forth on the coffee table. Grandma takes a second car, faces Claire from the other side of the table, and imitates the rolling, saying, "Zoom, zoom, zoom," as she rolls. Then she pauses. Rolling is the theme of the imitation game, which Claire has set. Claire stops and looks up during Grandma's pause, and Grandma takes that as a cue and rolls again, which Claire imitates with her own car. Grandma repeats this whole round again. But Grandma can tell that Claire is losing interest in this game because she's not responding or participating as energetically as before. Also, this is a skill that Claire performs easily. So Grandma makes a variation. She puts a long wooden block on the coffee table with one end of it on a stack of books, and she sets her car on the high end and lets it roll down. Claire watches this with great interest and then rolls her car on the table again. Grandma gets her attention, rolls her car down the hill again, pauses, and then prompts Claire to do the same by helping her place her car on top of the block. Claire's car rolls down, and Grandma cheers. Grandma rolls her car again and then starts to help Claire. But Claire now does it herself, and Grandma cheers again. This is now appealing to Claire, who shifts her focus to this new game, and the two imitate each other for a few more rounds on the hill. Grandma realizes that she and Claire have built theme and variation in their imitation game. She also notes the number of imitations, including new acts, that Claire is now making. The length of Claire's attention to the play routine, and the number of practice turns, learning opportunities, that Claire experiences. This strategy has allowed Claire's grandmother to do more teaching in the play than she could have if she had only stayed with the theme. Claire likes the variation described before and has learned to imitate it after a few experiences with it, which Grandma realizes may be necessary to show a new idea and have it become interesting to Claire. If Claire doesn't like a variation after a few examples, Grandma can go back to the rolling game for a turn or two and then try a different variation, like crashing the cars or rolling them off the coffee table. Grandma understands that the overall goal is to extend the length of the joint activity routine, to have as many back-and-forth imitative exchanges as possible, and to weave in opportunities for varied imitation. Once the cars begin to lose Claire's interest, or if the game loses its social nature or becomes overly repetitive, Grandma is ready to suggest, "All done," and model putting her car in the car box, gesturing for Claire to do the same. A nice ending to this well-done joint activity routine. Chapter Summary. This chapter has focused on ways to help your child increase his or her imitation of you and others. We began by discussing the importance of your imitating your child, his or her actions and sounds. We then discussed several different types of imitations. Imitation of actions on objects, the easiest for most children with ASD. Imitation of sounds, imitation of varied actions, and imitation of gestures and facial movements, the hardest for many children with ASD. If you have followed along, you have increased the imitative opportunities your child has throughout the day. We then discussed the importance of adding variations to imitations to keep them from getting too repetitive. We pointed out how well imitation routines fit inside the four-part structure for joint activity routines. Setup, theme, variations, and closing transition. And finally, we mentioned how imitative joint activity routines can fit into all your child care routines. Not just toy or other object play and sensory social routines, including songs, but also meals, different types of caregiving, book routines, and household chores. Each imitation is a learning opportunity, and by embedding these kinds of games throughout all your activities with your child, You can dramatically increase the number of learning opportunities your child has. Refrigerator list. Goal. To teach your child how to imitate different actions. Steps. Imitate your child's play with objects and expect your child to imitate back. Imitate your child's vocalizations and sounds and expect your child to imitate back. Use prompts to encourage imitation, but fade them fast. Don't expect perfection. Accept your child's approximations. Make your imitative games turn-taking games, mini conversations. Use the 4-step joint activity structure to vary the imitations. Use songs and sensory social routines to build gesture imitations. Stay in your child's spotlight. 9. Let's get technical. How children learn. Chapter Goal. To explain the basic principles and underlying strategies for helping your child engage, communicate, and learn, so you can apply these in new ways to boost your child's learning. Chapters 4 through 8 have provided the building blocks that form the foundation for your child's learning. If you have followed along and practiced these strategies, you have already accomplished a lot and have likely seen a noticeable increase in your child's ability to engage, communicate, and learn. Good for you. Now we want to provide some background on how kids learn so you can use these underlying principles flexibly in new situations as your child moves forward and meets new learning challenges. With an understanding of antecedents, events that immediately precede a behavior, behaviors, your child's goal-directed actions, and consequences, the ABCs of learning, you can motivate and teach new and even more sophisticated behaviors you want your child to learn, from pretending to starting to speak. These principles are based on the science of applied behavior analysis, ABA. In Chapter 1, we have explained that ABA is the application of the science of learning to help people learn new behaviors or change existing ones, including reducing the frequency of problem behaviors. We use these principles, the ABCs of learning, throughout the chapters of the book. Why applied behavior analysis is so important. We have defined what ABA is, but you may not know that it isn't one specific intervention approach. This is a common misunderstanding. ABA is applying the science of learning to understanding and changing specific behaviors, and it underlies many different early intervention approaches for children. Discrete trial training, pivotal response teaching, the Early Start Denver model, reciprocal imitation training, milieu teaching, and incidental teaching all use the principles of ABA. You've been using them too. If you've been following the chapters up to this point and trying the strategies from each one with your child, you have taught your child a number of skills. In other words, you've encouraged new skill learning in your child by making it worthwhile for your child to learn what you're teaching. Because we've found it so helpful for parents to learn new habits of interacting with their children, we've been walking you through the use of these without using the technical terms of ABA to help you get started. But the truth is that even your own behavior has been shaped by the principles of learning. You've been following the rules of learning new behaviors, too. You've been trying new strategies, and the rewarding consequence of your applying these strategies has been experiencing the delight of seeing your child learn from you, right before your eyes. Pretty motivating, isn't it? Now is a good time to understand the rules of learning in a more technical way, because this is likely to help you become more aware of many things. 1. Your own behavior. 2. The meaning and goals that underlie your child's behaviors. 3. How various situations lead to or cue your child's behaviors. 4. How various events that follow your child's behavior reward your child for behaving in certain ways. Once you understand how the ABCs of learning work to build and maintain your child's current set of behaviors, you will have the tools you need to, 1. Teach your child new ways of behaving that are more age-appropriate or more acceptable, encouraging desirable behaviors and discouraging undesirable ones. 2. Increase the number of learning opportunities for your child that are potentially present in every daily activity. And 3. Help your child take full advantage of these learning opportunities you are providing. What's happening in autism? Children with autism respond to the ABCs of learning just like everyone else. But 3 aspects of autism demand a much more explicit focus on their learning than we need for other children. 1. Children with ASD are not as interested as other children in pleasing other people. Most children appear quite aware of their parents' pleasure or displeasure in response to what they say and do. Thus, their parents' approval or disapproval naturally serves to shape children's behavior, since children are motivated to gain parental attention and approval. Children with autism, however, are usually not so aware of or affected by the subtle or even not so subtle social consequences of their behavior, and therefore aren't as likely to do what adults want them to do just to please them. 2. Children with autism are less interested than other children in sharing their experiences with others. Most small children share with others by making eye contact, smiling, giving or showing objects, and pointing out interesting objects to their parents. For example, by the age of 12 to 18 months, most children will start pointing to things they find interesting, labeling them, and then looking toward their parents to share or show what they are noticing. They want their parents' attention and response. However, these child behaviors, joint attention behaviors, are quite infrequent in young children with ASD. And without these tools in their repertoire, they miss out on an enormous amount of language learning, social learning, and interpersonal connectedness. This is why you've been developing ways to promote what is known as shared attention or joint attention with your child in many of the strategies you've already learned. We focus very specifically on teaching joint attention in Chapter 10. 3. Children with autism imitate others less than other children their age do. Other children seem to have an internal goal of being like others, and to find their own personal pleasure in doing what others do, and doing so independently. A child without ASD wants to handle a spoon alone, put on her own socks and shoes, do what her big brother or sister can do. We've heard many parents of children with autism say, "I think he would happily have me dress or feed, diaper, etc., him forever. He doesn't seem to have any desire to be independent or to do things for himself." Children with autism may imitate another person to make a toy work or to get to the cookie they want, in other words, to achieve a goal, but usually not just to be like another. Without that powerful goal, a child with autism does not practice skills he sees others use, and so he misses out on learning social and adaptive behavior from observing others. That's why we spent so much time on teaching imitation in Chapter 8, to help your child build up motivation to do what others do. My son was less interested than others in being independent, but became more and more interested in being like his sister or like friends as he saw them doing appealing things. I first noticed this when his sister was hopping around pretending to be a frog. He realized that she was having a great deal of fun and started hopping with her, even though he might not have understood the pretend play aspect at the time. He does now at age 3.5. Having his sister or other role models demonstrate fun activities, I think, has helped his overall ability to care about and model his behavior after that of peers. He is still less motivated than other children to do things that don't seem as obviously fun, such as washing his hands, but I think even that motivation is improving as he understands that he can learn from them. He is doing more and more things that are expected behaviors rather than just fun behaviors. He has been able to start a taekwondo class recently due to his improved ability to model others and show appropriate behavior in a class. Many of the activities mentioned in previous chapters can be used by other children, especially when the children are slightly older, to encourage cooperative play and imitation. Why is it a problem? Because children with autism are less interested in pleasing others, sharing their experiences with others, and imitating others, they miss out on many ABC learning opportunities that are present in the daily caregiving and play that provide most children with constant learning opportunities. These missed opportunities are reflected in the developmental delays in language development, gestural development, self-care skills, and social play that are part of the profile of early autism. Since children with autism have difficulty using existing social interactions as learning opportunities, those around them need to make those opportunities more explicit. That's the good news. It is possible to teach a child with autism to enjoy the praise of others, to enjoy sharing and imitating others. To make this happen in a wider set of circumstances and with a wider set of behaviors, you need to know the basic principles that are operating when learning occurs. When Molly sees big sister Tina get some milk from the refrigerator, she screams and grabs at Tina to get the milk. Dad says to Tina, "Your sister wants some milk. Give it to her and get more for yourself." Tina cooperatively hands Molly the glass of milk and gets another. What has happened here? Molly's behaviors involve screaming and grabbing, occurring in response to the antecedent of seeing another person with some milk, and have resulted in a positive consequence or reinforcement. She has achieved her goal and gotten the milk she wanted. Next time Molly sees someone with a glass of milk and she wants it, she will be more likely to scream and grab. A well-meaning father who cares about his daughter and understands her desires has inadvertently rewarded her unwanted behavior by having her sister hand over the milk. As you'll see, Applying the learning principles described in this chapter can dramatically change the outcome of situations like this. What you can do to understand and teach the ABCs of learning to your child. There are 6 specific steps you can carry out to increase your understanding of the ABCs of learning and teach your child new skills and appropriate behaviors. Step 1. Pay attention to what your child does. B is for behavior. Step 2. Choose the reward. C is for consequence. Step 3. Identify what came first, right before the behavior occurred. A is for antecedent. Step 4. Put the ABCs of learning together. Step 5. Use the ABCs to increase your child's learning opportunities and teach your child new skills and behaviors. Step 6. Change unwanted behaviors. Step 1. Pay attention to what your child does. B is for behavior. Rationale. All behavior is lawful. In other words, all children do the things they do for a reason. Behind every single action your child or anyone else performs is a reason, a goal for that behavior. And no matter how unusual the action is, there is a logic to it, a reason why the person is doing it. This goes for what people say as well as what they do. It also goes for what they don't do. When you see your child doing something that makes no sense to you, stop and ask yourself, what is her goal? It will often be clear, and then you will see the purpose or function of that puzzling behavior. All behavior is functional. It functions for the person. It generally results in some positive consequence for her. We'll come back to this later in more detail, but for now, consider the following rules to help you understand the reasons or goals behind your child's behavior. Rule 1. We focus on what children do, their behavior, not on what they know. We do not measure our success at teaching in terms of what children end up knowing, but rather in what they do routinely. Why? Because little children cannot tell us what they know, and because what we want to teach are the behaviors that are difficult because of autism, the way they act toward others, communicate with others, play with objects, and participate in daily activities. It is common for us to ask a question like, "Does she use a fork?" about a child, and to hear a parent answer, "Yes, she knows how to use it. She prefers to use her hands, but if I make her, she will take a bite with a fork." We'd argue, then, that the correct answer to the question is no, because knowing how to do something is not the same as doing it. And the kinds of skills that young children with autism need to learn are those that are used all the time, independently, without someone having to make them use them. Skills like speech, gesture, sharing, play with others, greeting others, sharing emotions, etc. So when we focus on what children with autism do, we are talking about observable, consistent behavior. And there are always reasons, goals, or functions that lie underneath their behavior, built up from their previous experiences of the physical or social consequences of the behavior. Rule 2. People do what they do to A. get something they want, something that pleases them, or B. avoid something they don't want, something that is unpleasant to them. It seems too simple to be true, But these are the only two primary reasons, goals, or functions for behavior. Your child behaves the way he does because in the past, the behavior has worked for him either to obtain something rewarding or to escape or avoid an experience he didn't like or something that prevented your child from achieving his goals. Activity. Observe your child's behavior. We suggest you find some time over a couple of days to observe some of your child's behaviors and consider the goals or functions behind the behaviors. Try to do a few observations in most of the six types of target activities: toy or other object play, social play, meals, caregiving, bathing, dressing, changing bedtime, book activities, and household chores. This does not mean that you must sit down with a notebook on the sidelines and observe. It means spending a little time paying attention to your child's behavior and what is happening around your child for 15 to 20 minutes here and there. Observe and jot down some specific behaviors that your child demonstrates and also those that you'd like to see more of. For example, saying "mama," giving you a smile, or coming to sit in your lap. Also, note the behaviors you don't like, the ones that you would rather see decrease. Remember the assumption that all intentional behavior is functional and goal-directed. Then ask yourself, what is your child's goal when your child is screaming, looking, and smiling at you, or leading you by the hand to the refrigerator? Seeing the goals and behavior in the bonus PDF is a form to use to take some notes so you can develop an eye for looking at your child's behaviors and thinking about the underlying goals. Try to include both positive behaviors and some negative behaviors. The form includes some examples to get you started. Make extra copies of the form if you need more space. Helpful tip. Remember, a behavior is an observable, intentional action. Yells, cries, grabs, reaches, speaks, looks. It is not a feeling or state. Frustrated, angry, distressed, in pain, or tired. Summary of Step 1. If you have followed along and carried out the preceding activities, you now know how to see the goals that underlie your child's behaviors. This step begins the process of understanding the function of your child's behavior, situation by situation. The next steps will address how to see the antecedents and consequences that cue and reinforce your child's behavior in each of these situations, but for now, see if you agree with most of the statements in the following checklist. If so, you are now armed with important skills for understanding the relationships between goals and behavior. Knowledge you will use in Step 2. If not, review this section, spend more time observing, and discuss your observations with a supportive other. Stay with this until you can easily see the goal underlying your child's behavior in a variety of situations. Activity Checklist. Am I effectively observing my child's behaviors? I have spent some time observing my child and have made a list of my child's behaviors. I understand the difference between an observable behavior and an interpretation of a state. For example, whining equals behavior. Tired equals state. All the behaviors on my list are observable behaviors, not states. I understand the goals underlying some of my child's requesting behavior. I understand the goals underlying some of my child's undesirable behaviors. I have observed some behaviors in most of the 6 types of target activities. Step 2. Choose the reward. C is for consequence. Rationale. Consequences are environmental responses to a child's behavior. They influence whether a child is likely to use the same behavior again to achieve a particular goal. Look at the examples in Did a Behavior's Consequences Meet Your Child's Goals? In the bonus PDF. For the first example, the child is approaching with upraised arms and face. The child's goal is a pickup. If the parent responds with a pickup, the child's goal has been met. A positive consequence, reward, or reinforcement has resulted. His behavior has been successful at getting him to his goal. The reward, being picked up, that is obtained as a result of the raised arm gesture, increases the chance, reinforced, that the child will use this gesture again to be picked up. A learning opportunity has occurred. A desired behavior, B, a clear gesture in this case, has been followed by a positive consequence, C. In other words, the behavior has been rewarded or reinforced by the pickup, the delivery of the child's goal. When we use the term learning opportunity in this book, this is what we mean. An occurrence in which you have helped your child produce a desired behavior or skill, and you have made sure that this is followed by a rewarding consequence, usually the goal your child has been seeking. There are also environmental consequences for unwanted behavior. Rushing to your child and providing comfort and attention when she screams is a typical parental reaction. However, if your child's goal in screaming is to get your attention, then meeting your child's goal by delivering the positive consequence of getting attention rewards or reinforces your child's screaming. It gives your child the message that screaming is a powerful way to get your attention. Your child will be more likely to scream for your attention next time she wants it, because it has been successful this time. Taking a look at the consequences that follow your child's behaviors is the second step toward understanding why your child does what she does. Whether behaviors are ones we appreciate, playing nicely, using language, or ones we don't appreciate, yelling, whining, repetitive behavior, screaming, running away, throwing things on the floor, hitting, behaviors are maintained by reinforcing consequences. The technical term for a consequence that increases the chances that the behavior will occur again is reinforcement. As in the preceding example of screaming to get attention, sometimes consequences that we think of as negative can act as reinforcement. But responding to a screaming child is actually positive reinforcement if the child has attained her goal. Now let's look at another situation. We'll continue to focus on screaming. In this situation, the parents of 4-year-old Jordan, the screamer just described, are trying to brush her teeth. They come to her with the toothbrush in hand. She screams the minute they touch her and puts up a huge fight when they try to get the toothbrush into her mouth. They cannot brush her teeth, and her parents give up in dismay. What has happened here? Jordan's goal is to escape from toothbrushing. Her screams and fighting are rewarded by her escape. Remember from our earlier discussion that there are basically 2 functions for behavior, Achieving something desirable and avoiding something undesirable. This is an example of escape as a reward. The technical name for this is negative reinforcement. The consequence is still reinforcing. Jordan has achieved her goal, but it is through the removal of an aversive stimulus, hence the term negative. The earlier example, when Jordan achieves her parents' attention through screaming, is an example of positive reinforcement. She has attained a desired consequence. Both attaining something pleasant and avoiding something unpleasant reinforce or strengthen the behavior your child uses to try to achieve her goals. Here is an important rule to consider when you are observing what consequences follow your child's behavior. Rule 3. Learning new behaviors occurs in response to their consequences. You have been using this rule to teach your child in each of the earlier chapters in Part 2 of this book. Every time you have given your child a choice and he chooses something, your child has told you what his goal is, to have that thing. When you are teaching your child to extend his arms to request being picked up, you first saw that your child had that goal in mind, because he approached you and indicated in some way that that was what he wanted. Then you extended your arms and got your child to extend his arms, the new skill you were teaching. After he raised his arms, the new skill, you picked him up. In doing so, you made sure he attained his goal. Your pickup was, and is, his reward, the reinforcement for the new behavior, extending his arms. And it is a reinforcement because he wants it. It's his goal. Activity. What behaviors do you want to reward? Every time you provide a toy, a food, or any activity that your child wants, you are rewarding whatever action your child has done just before you hand it over. If she has cried just before, you are rewarding that. If she has looked at you, you're rewarding that. If he has not looked at you, you're rewarding that. If she has grabbed something, you're rewarding that. You strengthen whatever action or behavior you reward. Keeping this idea in mind as you interact with your child will help you be a more effective teacher for your child. Try to make sure that your child experiences positive consequences for desired behaviors. Try to make sure that your child does not receive positive consequences for undesirable behaviors. Rule 4. Behaviors that are not reinforced will decrease over time. Removing all the positive consequences or rewards of a behavior will weaken it over time, reduce its frequency through a process called extinction. Extinction occurs once all possible benefits of a behavior are eliminated. What about Molly? Molly's father decides that he will no longer reward her screaming for her sister's possessions. He instructs Tina to turn her back on Molly and walk away when Molly screams and tries to grab something. Tina appreciates the change. She walks to her room and closes the door if Molly starts to scream. Over the course of the week, Molly stops heading toward Tina for things and instead begins to go toward her parents and pull at them to get her what she wants. The parents decide that this is a better form of communication and allow her to lead them to the cabinet or fridge. We see that over the week, Molly's screaming and grabbing at her sister has been extinguished. The behavior is no longer successful at achieving her goal, and so she gives it up and finds a new behavior that is more functional for her, one that is more successful at helping her reach her goal, dragging her parents to what she wants. They follow through by fulfilling her desires. So this new behavior is now being rewarded via the positive consequences that result. Extinction can also reduce desirable behaviors. Here is a very common example. Alicia is the mother of Max, who has ASD, and his younger sister, Carrie. Alicia tells Max to ask Carrie for a turn with a toy instead of grabbing it from her. So Max asks Carrie for the flashlight. Carrie ignores his request. So Max is not rewarded for asking. After three tries, Max grabs the toy and takes a turn. His grab is rewarded by getting the toy. His request is ignored. If this continues, he will not continue to request. His requests will quickly be extinguished because they are not successful at helping him attain his goal, and he will continue to grab because it is successful. Here is one way this could play out differently. What about Carrie and Max? Max asks Carrie for the flashlight. Carrie ignores him. Alicia steps in, guides Carrie's hand and flashlight to Max's hand, and makes sure he gets the flashlight. Max's request has been rewarded. But what about Carrie? She also needs to be rewarded for giving it to him. Fortunately, Alicia has another flashlight right there and offers it to Carrie right away. Carrie takes it and is happy. So Carrie has been rewarded for giving the flashlight in response to Max's open hand and request. Each child has been rewarded for a mature behavior. Realistically, it isn't always possible to have another item available. You don't necessarily know in advance that a struggle will develop over a flashlight, a fork, a plate, or a toy. And asking the older sibling to help by giving up the flashlight or other object can lead to a lot of resentment in the older sibling. It is helpful to get buy-in from other siblings at home to get their cooperation. Explain what you are doing to help their sibling with ASD learn to communicate and why it is important. That way, if they do give up an object, they feel proud, a reward, and are praised by you, another reward. Alicia could also try giving a different appealing toy to Carrie or Max, along with lots of verbal praise and hugs when the requested object is handed over, a positive consequence. Rule 5. There is one other way that consequences change behavior over time. When a consequence, usually a negative consequence, follows a behavior and results in a decrease in frequency of the behavior, it is called punishment. Punishment, in this case, doesn't mean sitting your child in the corner or something similar. It simply refers to a consequence that is unwanted by the child or adult and therefore leads to a reduction of the behavior that has directly preceded the punishment. What about Carrie and Max? Let's imagine that after asking nicely to share the toy and being ignored, Max grabs for the toy. Carrie quickly leaves the room with the toy, not allowing Max to have it. Max begins crying and goes to Alicia, who says, "That's what happens when you grab." Max is less likely to grab next time because his grabbing has resulted in an unpleasant or negative consequence. He has lost access to the toy. In technical language, his behavior has been punished. Punishment and extinction both result in decreases of behavior over time. Any unwanted consequence is technically punishment. For a child, being told no or not now, having a parent put away an object that the child wants, or having a sibling take something away or push her down when she approaches to play, can all be punishing consequences, unwanted consequences that follow an intentional behavior. Unfortunately, siblings don't always want to reward nice, polite requests to share. I have encouraged my older daughter to encourage her brother to share, but it can be hard for her to give up toys she values, even when he asks very nicely. I want him to be rewarded in some way for his polite requests, though. We've worked out a system that seems to help. If my daughter has a toy that she absolutely does not want to share under any circumstances, then she is expected to keep it in her room or out of sight of her brother. If she is playing with a toy anywhere else in the house, then she is expected to share. If my son grabs a toy, he can't have it. I take it away so that my daughter is not the one engaging him in a fight. We have a rule that neither child is allowed to grab toys, even if the other one has taken a toy inappropriately. If he asks nicely, then she is expected to let him see it, but she can ask for it back right away. For instance, if she is in the middle of a game and doesn't want to be interrupted. If she asks nicely, then he is expected to cooperate and to return the toy. My son has become very good at sharing even his most valued toys. Helpful tip. Quick terminology review. When a behavior is followed by goal achievement, a positive consequence is reinforced. When it is routinely not followed by any goal-related event, it is extinguished. When it is followed by an unwanted event that results in goal loss, it is punished. Extinction and punishment weaken the behavior being used to seek that goal. Reinforcement strengthens it. Children's intentional behaviors are strengthened or weakened by the consequences that follow their responses. Activity. Continue to observe your child's behavior. For this exercise, take a day or two to find some observation times to pay attention to the consequences of your child's behaviors, considered in terms of your child's goals. Think about whether the consequence of the behavior met your child's goals and thus was a reinforcer, R. Whether it provided an unwanted consequence, punishment, P. Or whether it had no consequence at all related to the goal, and thus resulted in extinction, X. In Did a Behavior's Consequences Meet Your Child's Needs in the bonus PDF, be sure to include some examples of both socially desirable behaviors that your child uses, eye contact, gestures, sounds, or words, and socially undesirable behaviors. For example, screaming and throwing. For all of these, remember that a reinforcer is the achievement of the child's goals. Sometimes even a behavior that on the surface seems like a negative response to the child's behavior, correction, scolding, etc., can be a reinforcer if it helps the child achieve her goal. For example, an older sibling's getting upset might serve as a reinforcer for a younger child who enjoys seeing the sibling upset. Make extra copies of the form if you need more space. Summary of Step 2. If you have followed along and carried out the preceding activities, you now know how to see the consequences that follow and reinforce, punish, or extinguish your child's behaviors. This step continues the process of understanding the function of your child's behavior, situation by situation. The next step, will address how to see the antecedents that cue your child's behavior in each of these situations. But for now, see if you agree with most of the statements in the following checklist. If so, you are now armed with important skills for understanding the relationships between goals and behavior, knowledge that you will use in step 3. If not, review this section, spend more time observing, and discuss your observations with a supportive other. Stay with this until you can easily see the consequences and the type of consequence underlying your child's behaviors in a variety of situations. Activity checklist. Am I identifying consequences of my child's behaviors? I have spent some time observing my child and have made a list of some of my child's behaviors. All the behaviors on my list are observable behaviors, not states. I have listed the goals and consequences that follow some of my child's desirable behaviors. I have listed the goals and consequences that follow some of my child's undesirable behaviors. I have been able to classify most of the consequences as reinforcing, extinguishing, or punishing. I have observed some behaviors, goals, and consequences in most of the 6 types of target activities. Step 3. Identify what came first, right before the behavior occurred. A is for antecedent. Rationale. We've been talking about 2 important principles for learning. 1. The function of a behavior is to gain or avoid certain experiences, and 2. The consequences that follow the behavior strengthen or weaken its use in that situation in the future. Now it is time for the 3rd key principle for understanding and changing behavior. 3. The event that occurs right before the behavior happens is the trigger or cue for the behavior to happen, the antecedent or stimulus that cues the behavior. Rule 6. Behaviors occur in response to a stimulus, also called an antecedent event. Antecedents are often observable in your child's environment. Your child sees something he wants, lollipop, or doesn't want, medicine container. He hears a noise, the garage door opening, that means Dad is home. He sees a dog he is afraid of. He walks into Grandma's kitchen and sees the shelf where Grandma always keeps the chips. Antecedents can also be felt. He is hungry. He is tired. Although we often focus a lot of attention on the consequences of a behavior, we need to focus just as much attention on the antecedents. If we are thinking about a behavior we want a child to develop, we have to think about what environmental event, what stimulus, should cue that new behavior. Then we have to make sure our teaching approach is focused on linking the new behavior to the appropriate cue, or antecedent. That way, we can use the antecedents in various situations to cue the behavior we want to see. We can also remove antecedents to help reduce the chances that an unwanted behavior will occur. What antecedents do we target? It's easy to focus on verbal instructions. We want children to behave as we tell them to. However, for most of this text, we have been helping you use nonverbal or gestural cues as antecedents as well. You have been demonstrating the use of toys, A, so your child would imitate, B, which resulted in an interesting effect, C. You have been pointing, A, so your child would look at and retrieve something, B, that she wanted or liked, C. You have started a chase game and then stopped, A, so your child would chase you, B, and end up getting caught and thrown up in the air. C. You have started a song your child enjoys and done a finger movement, A1, and a pause, A2, your child imitated, B. And then you continued the song, C. In all these examples, you have used gestures, nonverbal communications, as the antecedents. You are probably quite skilled at this by this point in the book. Note another important point. Many behaviors we want children